Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. News came last week, Hulk Hogan's lawsuit against Gawker Media had a financial backer, Silicon Valley billionaire Peter Thiel. His strategy to maximize the harm to Gawker. Thiel reportedly put $10 million into legal firepower to bring the suit over invasion of privacy. In 2007, Gawker outed Thiel as gay. Many see the billionaire as getting payback, $140 million award here, now being challenged in appeal, using Hulk Hogan's lawsuit to take Gawker down. This hour on Point, big money and free speech. The billionaire versus Gawker. You can join us on air or online. This conversation is always on. With a lot of media against the ropes, can billionaires now buy vengeance, chill the press, shut it down? Did Gawker deserve the hit? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Back in March, Hulk Hogan stood outside a Florida courtroom after he learned he'd won $115 million in his case against Gawker. Funded, we now know, by billionaire, Silicon Valley billionaire Peter Thiel. Hulk Hogan was later awarded $25 million in punitive damages, bringing the total damages to $140 million. Here he was in March.
I'm really happy about everything that's happened, and I think we made history today because I think we protected a lot of people from maybe going through what I went through, so we're very excited, very happy.
It's a lot of money. Could bring Gawker down. Thiel has not been speaking about it publicly, but here's just the sound of the Silicon Valley billionaire in 2012 during a talk at Stanford University talking about government regulation stifling innovation.
I believe we are in a world where innovation in stuff was outlawed. It was basically outlawed in the last 40 years. Part of it was environmentalism. Part of it was risk aversion. And all the engineering disciplines that had to do with stuff have basically been outlawed one by one.
Peter Thiel, libertarian, also a Trump supporter, and now we're told backer of the suit that brought that $140 million in total challenge to Gawker that they're now trying to digest. On Friday, their CEO, Nick Denton, talked with CNBC about Peter Thiel's campaign against Gawker. He said knowing Thiel is behind Hogan's suit changes the story.
It becomes a story about the power of the billionaire class, particularly the power of the billionaire class in Silicon Valley. They have money, they have wealth, they have anonymity, they have special purpose vehicles, they have offshore accounts. They are exercising their power from behind the scenes, and I think it's more important than ever that there be an independent media to hold them to account.
They have special purpose vehicles. I don't know how that figures in here, but there's a lot in this pot. With us now from New Haven, Connecticut, is Emily Bazelon, staff writer at the New York Times Magazine, host of the Slate Political Gabfest, senior research scholar at Yale Law School. Emily, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks so much for having me.
And with us from New York is Jason Tance. He's editor-at-large at Wired. Jason, welcome to you.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Can you just take us back to the basics of this story, Jason? I mean, I guess I don't know where to begin. Maybe we begin with Gawker Media in one of its blogs back in 2007 saying, hey, Peter Thiel is gay.
Okay, sure. We can start there. That was actually one of its blogs that's no longer extant, ValleyWag, and its writer Owen Thomas wrote a piece called it was titled "Peter Thiel is Totally Gay, People." And in the way Gawker does things, it purported to be about more than just the news that he was gay. The story was really, why won't Peter Thiel talk about the fact that he's gay? And if Silicon Valley is so meritorious, why is the fact that he is gay kind of an open secret? Peter Thiel has said that was the moment that he swore vengeance against Gawker. Gawker actually has a different story. They argue that this is in fact a cover and that what Thiel is really upset about is the fact that Gawker is kind of dedicated to this idea of piercing the veil of being above it all that Silicon Valley tends to project and that they are dedicated to essentially cutting power down to size wherever they find it. Peter Thiel, on the other hand, is very dedicated to the idea, as in the clip that you played, of protecting a safe space essentially for entrepreneurs to innovate. And that they need to be sort of shielded and protected and allowed kind of free reign for a while. And that whether it's the government or media organizations like Gawker, who are kind of motivated to chip away at them, that that causes a very serious problem in terms of future growth and future innovation.
Emily, then along comes the sex tape. Now, Hulk Hogan made this. His real name is Terry Bollea, I guess. This was a couple of years back, and it's him having sex with a friend's wife, and Gawker posted a video out of that, and he sues them. What was the charge of the complaint, Emily, in the suit?
Hulk Hogan is arguing this is an invasion of his privacy, that this video clip of him having sex with someone else's wife has no public or news value, and is an invasion of his privacy in a way that should allow him to receive damages. And the jury in Florida agreed with Hulk Hogan and gave him the giant damages award of $140 million that you've already described.
So suddenly we're into big money. And then last week we learned that Peter Thiel had sunk a bunch of money, maybe $10 million into this, in what's called litigation funding. I had never even focused on this, maybe never even heard about it before. Emily, what is it? How does it work?
There's a cottage industry of what's called third-party litigation funding, and it's mostly done as an economic investment. So the idea is you have a claim for civil damages. You could win a giant pool of money like this one, but you're going to need a lot of upfront help with the expenses. Maybe you have to hire a lot of experts to prove your case. You have to pay for your lawyer. The lawyer doesn't want to just work on contingency. For whatever reason, there's an outlay upfront. And so somebody comes in and basically invests in your case. It's like a kind of risk sharing, where the person gives you the money you need to bring the case, and then when you win the damages award, if you do, that person gets a big cut or, you know, whatever arrangement you make. This, however, is a different animal, right? Because Peter Thiel has made it clear he wasn't really trying to get his $10 million back. He was trying to take revenge and wipe out Gawker.
So, Emily, how do you look at this? Do you see a legitimate case here on invasion of privacy? Hulk Hogan says, come on, this was not something I meant to be out in public. Or do you see a billionaire-financed attack on freedom of speech?
You know, it's so hard to defend the publication of this sex tape. It's at the outer fringes of the First Amendment. I don't have much appetite for launching a big defense for it, honestly. However, I do think this is a billionaire attack on the First Amendment. And the reason is that Peter Thiel kept his involvement secret. Without this $10 million, this case might well not have gone forward. And also, Hogan and his lawyer rejected settlement offers from Gawker along the way and dropped a claim that would have allowed the insurance company to carry Gawker's damages, which also suggests this is not really about money. And I guess I think that litigation should be more connected to market forces, and the notion that you could have a billionaire kind of secretly step in and start pulling the legal strings here makes me very nervous.
Jason, does it look at this point as though this could, in fact, bring Gawker Media down?
Well, the challenging thing, you know, Gawker, of course, has said they're going to appeal this ruling.
Yep.
They need money to do that. And by coming out and saying not only have I funded this suit, but I've also got at least two other suits that I'm currently funding, and I'll keep doing as much as it takes.
Yeah, sorry,
Thiel has said this, right. He's essentially signaling to anybody who would invest in Gawker or purchase Gawker that this is going to be a bad investment because they're going to be tied up in court for a very, very long time. And that's what makes it really difficult, and that's probably why he has ended up coming out in public right now. You know, Gawker has already taken outside investment. They had to post a $50 million bond even in order to appeal. And in order to get any more money, which they will certainly require to continue fighting this, they'll have to take on an investor who's willing to face that kind of organized pressure. And that's going to be difficult for them to do.
Do you see a media environment in which this could put a chill more broadly? Not everybody is out there publishing sex tapes of Hulk Hogan, but it is if people are doing their job, they're going to run up against the interests of all kinds of powers, including billionaires out of Silicon Valley and elsewhere. Do you see the potential for a real chill on press freedom in this country, despite the kind of tawdry bit of information, a sex tape at the heart of this one, Jason?
I do worry about it. It's tricky. You know, the old saying was don't pick fights with someone who can buy ink by the barrel. And the new one might be don't pick fights with someone who can, you know, finance lawsuits by the metric ton. The tricky thing is that Thiel isn't litigating the case, you know, his own – how he was wronged, right? It's not that he's saying that that the piece outing him was legally actionable. He waited. He bided his time until he found a plaintiff that that he thought he could sort of attach his moral escapade or crusade really to. So journalists know when they're writing about litigious people, and they're very, very careful when they're writing about litigious people because they know everything needs to be buttoned up. They may be less so when they're writing about people who are not known to be litigious or who they think may not have the resources to fund lawsuits. What the challenge here is that potentially journalists will have to face every story with the same kind of care as they would somebody who they know is potentially litigious, because you don't know which case will end up being the one that comes to get you. And in some ways, that's good, right? Because there's no reason that just because people are rich and litigious, they should be protected in a way that others are not. But it's also dangerous because, frankly, being that kind of careful, it doesn't scale, right? You can't lawyer up every single story that you write. And you don't – if you're a good journalist, people aren't going to feel good about everything that you write about them.
Nicholas Lehman writes in The New Yorker, the Gawker case may be only the first in a string of lawsuits that unleash a generation's worth of resentment against the uniquely legally privileged position of the American press at a moment when the press is far more vulnerable economically and culturally than it used to be. He says journalists and their lawyers ought to be arming themselves for a protracted war. Do you see it coming, Emily?
I think that it could come. Nicholas Lehman is generally a wise observer of the press and the law. You know, we have had this protected position in this country because of the Supreme Court's decision in New York Times versus Sullivan, which created a very high standard for winning a libel suit. But it doesn't create a high standard for bringing one. And as Jason was describing, bringing lawsuits against the press can have, I think, a corrosive effect on how aggressive and sharp reporters are, as well as, I mean, we want them to be accurate, but we worry about them moving away from stories because of lawsuit threats.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about big money and free speech, the billionaire Peter Thiel versus the no-hold-barred news website Gawker. You know the story, $140 million judgment there for Hulk Hogan about a sex tape that they published. They had also said that Peter Thiel, they had outed him as gay when he wasn't ready to be outed. Almost a decade later, he's come back, and now we know, financed a big lawsuit to the tune of maybe $10 million against Gawker that may bring the company down. And people are really talking about the impact of this. You can join us this hour. What do you think? When a billionaire like Thiel puts up $10 million to go after Gawker on legal grounds, is that a fair fight? Is it fair, right, when Gawker casually outs Thiel as gay and keeps on rolling? Do you think journalists will feel free to report when billionaires can shut them down? Do they feel too free in the new media world? Jason Tanz is here, of Wired Magazine, editor-at-large there. And Emily Bazelon, staff writer at the New York Times Magazine, co-host of the Slate Political Gab Fest, joins us from New Haven, Connecticut today. She's a research scholar at Yale Law School there. A little more of Peter Thiel. Made his money, his first money, in PayPal, worth reportedly $2 or $3 billion. A Trump delegate, it appears, he talked with Bloomberg in April. He's a libertarian, said he supported Republicans supported Republicans in the past. But he talked here with Bloomberg about why he prefers Silicon Valley to D.C. politics, just to give you a little feeling of the man.
I think this is where people cumulatively will make a much bigger difference in solving various problems, changing our society, et cetera, even though, you know, there probably are some problems that can't be solved. Not every problem can be solved by startups, but it's a place where people can solve problems. And then many of the problems that can't be solved by startups, I worry, are just not going to get solved at all.
Libertarian Peter Thiel, keep it out of Washington. That's his kind of view of the world. On Friday, Gawker Media CEO Nick Denton talked with CNBC about the Thiel's campaign against Gawker.
We've had a billionaire behind the curtain, pulling strings, hiring law firms, pursuing a decade-long a decade-long strategy. It's kind of extraordinary. I mean, I'm slightly impressed.
He's not the only billionaire in the game, but some from other angles. I mean, Jeff Bezos, Amazon CEO, bought the Washington Post in 2013, bought it for $250 million, the Washington Post. But he came out yesterday, slammed Peter Thiel for this funding of the lawsuit against Gawker. Jeff Bezos spoke in favor of free speech.
This country has the best free speech protections in the world because of the Constitution, but also because of our cultural norms. And you don't want to erode those. You don't want to create any kind of climate of fear or chill with respect to free speech norms. And the most important thing to remember about that is that beautiful speech doesn't need protection. It's ugly speech that needs protection.
And maybe a sex tape of Hulk Hogan and his friend's wife, maybe that comes under the ugly speech category. Emily, would you remind us of American free speech protections? You cited the case you mentioned, New York Times versus Sullivan. How does American legal tradition put our free speech in a different standing from what you find elsewhere in the world?
To win a suit for libel or slander, you have to show that the person you're suing showed reckless disregard for the truth or absolute malice. That's a really high standard. It means that American journalists can get things wrong and still win most of these lawsuits. And an invasion of privacy suit is essentially subject to the same standard because it's treated as a kind of related claim. You don't want plaintiffs to be able to make an end run around the libel laws with an invasion of privacy claim. So, again, it's hard to win one of these lawsuits.
And if you compare it to, I don't know, the UK or elsewhere, how much stronger have American protections been for the press when they get in there?
They're considerably stronger, and this, again, is part of our First Amendment tradition. We are counting on the marketplace of ideas to wipe out the errors and the wrong, or as Jeff Bezos said, the ugly speech that people disagree with. We want a kind of cacophony of perspectives. We don't want to chill the freedom of the press or freedom of expression before it happens. We want lots of response to it.
So here we are with the sex tape, and we're right in the middle of it. Bruce in Coral Springs, Florida. Bruce, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi. I think that the way this conversation was initially framed is a perfect example of how media wants to control the dialogue. The introduction to this program specifically made it seem like Gawker was in the right for publishing this and that Hulk Hogan was in the wrong for fighting it, and that is completely incorrect. I would challenge anybody who is in favor of Gawker to go ahead and publish their own sex tape of them and their significant others. I mean, this took place in the most private place that can, a bedroom, and full expectation of privacy, and yet it was published. And that is a clear invasion of privacy. It doesn't matter who's financing the lawsuit. You know, I mean, it's a good thing that Hulk Hogan did get the resource to follow this through, because Gawker is 100% responsible for invasion of privacy in this case.
Hey, I'll tell you right up front that my prejudice is for free speech, Bruce. There's no question about that. But do I understand somebody being upset when a video taken in their own bedroom is suddenly out in public? Yes, I understand that at the same time. I mean, Emily, do we see a moving line here? Was Gawker clearly over the line? Was there a precedent for protecting it publishing this, what our caller calls, you know, the most intimate stuff in your life?
Well, let's accept the premise of the call. Let's say that Gawker was over the line. We could argue that, but let's say that's true. Then the question is, what should the remedy be? Should Gawker settle, advance a decent settlement offer, pay the person off who is in this position as you would normally have, or should Gawker be wiped out of business? That's really the choice that we're talking about here, right? It's not whether Hulk Hogan was going to get some money because Gawker offered to sue. It's whether Peter Thiel invoking this kind of special idea of immunity for Silicon Valley should be able to try to put Gawker out of business. And what we think about Silicon Valley essentially rejecting the kinds of aggressive press coverage that every other sector of American society is subject to.
Tom, I'm sorry if I may jump in here. Yeah. You know, to Bruce's point, I think a lot of this conversation is actually a meta conversation about who is controlling the news that you get, you know.
Yes.
And I think both Gawker and Thiel see themselves as outsiders taking down entrenched insider interests. Gawker launched with the idea that there are stories that journalists tell one another, but once they get published, they sanitize them and water them down. And so Gawker was going to tell the stories that what's actually happening. And they're a very anti-elite, anti-insider organization.
And here we're not really talking so much about Hulk Hogan's bedroom, though that would be part of it, obviously. Their blog put it out. But also about what's the real life in Silicon Valley that Emily says maybe people there don't want told.
Correct. And Thiel, on the other hand, would say that these are false narratives that are coming out, that he knows people whose lives have been destroyed by Gawker, which has, you know, a reckless disregard for the truth. And, you know, again, Gawker, to Emily's point, is incredibly difficult to defend. And I think the merits of this case notwithstanding, the question becomes, you know, are these shadowy Silicon Valley billionaires who increasingly own the distribution of media and which is run by secret algorithms that they can't really explain or describe, are they the ones who are determining what we see in the information that we get? Or is it this kind of shadowy media cabal that makes decisions behind closed doors with reckless disregard for what happens to its subjects? And are they controlling the media that we see? Or are we members here sitting talking on NPR framing the conversation in such a way that's false? And I think that's the sort of meta conversation behind all of this. Who is actually determining the conversation that we are having as a country?
Jason, Emily Bazelon, please stand by. Mark Randazza joins us right now from Las Vegas, First Amendment attorney, managing partner at the Randazza Legal Group, contributor to Legal Matters on CNN. He's written about the Gawker versus Thiel case. You can link to his essay at our website, onpointradio.org. Mark Randazza in Las Vegas, welcome to On Point. Great to have you here.
Hi, thanks, Tom.
I want to look at where you finally come down on this, but take us back for just a moment to what you say were at one time dirty words, and they are, and I don't even know them, Baratry and Champerty? What were these?
Baratry and Champerty, yes. These are the legal nerd terms for when somebody else is pushing litigation. But these have largely been eliminated as problematic practices because we have contingency funding.
Unpack that for us. These were dirty words in the first place back in old England. Why?
Yes, at common law. Well, because for the reasons that everybody's saying that they don't want this billionaire to finance litigation, we kind of aspire to this idea that litigation should be one person has a grievance with another person, and then through a neutral adversary system, that the truth will come out and the victor will prevail. Some people look at it when someone else is pushing someone else's agenda as being wrong. Someone's funding someone else's lawsuit, that's wrong. In fact, that's even still the case in many countries. But here, we've embraced it. We've embraced the contingent fee system, which is one form of someone else funding it.
And explain what that is. You mean if we win this case, we'll get a cut of the settlement.
Yeah, then you get paid. I mean, if Hulk Hogan's lawyers had taken this on a typical contingency fee case, they'd be looking pretty good right now, be writing a pretty big tax check.
But is contingency fee dynamic the same as an outside big money guy coming in not to pursue the case, but just to fund the pursuit?
Sure. Well, look, this is what you call impact litigation. All right, this is not something new, and I think a lot of the hand-wringing about it is because of who this funder is and what his class is. I mean, impact litigation is nothing that we don't see all the time. The ACLU brings impact litigation to further the cause of civil liberties or civil rights. The NRA does the same thing, and in fact, I mean, I don't mind admitting I've done the same thing. I've had people... In fact, back a few years ago, there was a very large revenge porn site up.
Okay.
And a third party came to me and said, I want to do something about this. I want to help. And they agreed to fund litigation against the parties running that site to get it shut down.
Yeah.
Everybody thought that was a wonderful endeavor because it shut down this site that was harming all these people in this way. Peter Thiel looks at his involvement in this case the same way. I mean, he's not... you know, he's not the boogeyman here. I really, my reflex is to immediately knee jerk to the far fringes of the First Amendment.
Free speech, you're saying. That's your reflex, okay?
Yeah, that's my reflex, and I always have to check myself because, you know, I think that being an absolutist is intellectually lazy, and it makes you miss the point sometimes.
So you think Thiel's on the right here?
Look, there are some problems I have with his involvement, okay? The one problem I have with it, just from a legal ethics standpoint, is that it seems from what's been reported that if they were turning down settlements that Hogan might otherwise have taken, or if they were structuring the litigation to avoid insurance being triggered...
Because he wanted the maximum damage to Gawker here, presumably, is the idea.
If that was being commanded by the guy with the purse strings,
yep,
and it wasn't something that the actual client wanted, then I have a problem. Because now what you have is... you don't have the lawyer and his client acting in the client's best interest. You have this third party. You know, this is the dilemma that comes up, for example, when you have an insurance company involved.
Yeah.
You know, insurance companies will often nominate some, insurance monkey lawyer to handle the thing, who forgets sometimes that he doesn't represent that insurance company.
Mm-hmm.
He represents the insured. But he also knows, I'm going to see this insurance adjuster 50 times over the next year. And if this company doesn't like how I'm doing things, it's not going to continue to use me. And I'm not ever going to see this poor guy that owns the ice cream store with the slip.
Right, so good luck to him. Mark, stand by for a minute. Emily Bazelon, do you agree that this is comparable to what Mark calls impact legislation that might be supported by the ACLU or the NRA for that matter?
It's a really interesting comparison. I've been trying to think through why I want this to be different. I think that Mark is right, that there are some similarities. But let's back up a step here. I mean, what we really are talking about is how much and how aggressive press coverage should be in Silicon Valley and what role Gawker has played there. And on this front, I have no trouble defending Gawker. I would much rather live in a world in which Gawker, which has had some really good journalists, writes, you know, aggressive, sometimes mean stories about the practices of people in Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. I see no reason why Silicon Valley should be subject to some special set of rules. And as a journalist who's done a lot of reporting there and found it to be an extremely thin-skinned and not transparent place, I think that's where I want to put the thumb on the scale.
Sam in Plantation, Florida. Sam, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. I've been a trial lawyer for 30 years, and I did not see this case, so I'm not sure what the defense theory was, but I would disagree vehemently with Ms. Bazelon as that this was the fringe. For 30 years, Hulk Hogan was a public figure who marketed himself as Mr. Clean Cut. Used to go around with a giant crucifix and talk to the little Hulksters about don't do drugs and live a clean life. It turned out he was doing drugs, and he wasn't living a clean life. Exactly when did exposing hypocrisy of public officials who have made millions, a public
figure
who made millions off of it, become a fringe issue?
Emily.
Those are good points. If Gawker wins in the appeals courts, that will be the reason it wins. And the kind of distinction between Hulk Hogan the character and Hulk Hogan the person, which I can't remember Hulk Hogan's real name, but he sort of claimed that was all like a character he was creating and it wasn't him. I don't find that to be persuasive either.
Sam in Louisville, Kentucky. Sam, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. I just feel like Thiel just bought the legal system. I mean, it's like legalized extortion. You can't whitewash the media. And malice, I mean, first, I don't think it was his bedroom that they were in. I think it was another man, or the husband of the other woman.
Yeah.
And I think he just starred in the highest paid porn in history. And the other thing regarding innovation, legislation does not stifle, but it encourages innovation. It simply encourages it in a new direction that benefits many more than just a few people who already own caustic resources, such as like coal and oil. So the oligarch really doesn't want change. They don't want competition because they may not be on top. They create these barriers to entry. And it's unfortunate that, you know, that they've already bought the legal system and we're seeing it, you know, in the election system.
Mark Randazzo, do you see the potential here for a bought legal system?
I've seen that since before my career began.
I mean, that's why you're in the field.
I mean, you know, you're fortunately in a civilized state like Massachusetts that doesn't have elected judges. You know, when I go and teach in Europe and I teach European law students and I explain to them that we do not have corruption in the United States. It doesn't exist. And they look at me and they kind of snicker. And I say, no, we renamed it campaign financing. So instead we have, you know, you can have this, the notion that this is a new era or a new dawn on a horrible dystopian day because a billionaire is financing litigation. I think that's a view with a very, you know, that's blinded as far as history goes.
Mark, let's stand by. We've got a big stew boiling here. Mark Grandazza, Emily Bazelon, Jason Tanz. We're talking about big money and free speech. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about big money and free speech. The billionaire Peter Thiel versus the no-holds-barred news website Gawker. You know the story, $140 million headed for Hulk Hogan. It's on appeal now. But after Gawker some time back published this sex tape, he was with his neighbor or his friend's wife. They had earlier offended Silicon Valley billionaire Peter Thiel. Turns out he put $10 million into the legal work against Gawker. And says he'll do it again if they don't go out of business after this hit. They're appealing it all right now. We're looking at what it means for freedom of speech, for protection in terms of protection of privacy. Emily Bazelon is with us, staff writer at the New York Times Magazine. She hosts Slate's Political Gabfest. Jason Tanz is here, editor-at-large for Wired. Mark Randazza is here from Las Vegas, First Amendment attorney, managing partner at the law firm Randazza Legal Group. He's sympathetic with Thiel. You can join us. Where do you come down? Could the threat of billionaire lawsuits chill our full free press coverage? Or was Gawker in the wrong here? What about billionaires just buying press outlets? Of course, Jeff Bezos has done that. He says Peter Thiel shouldn't have brought this suit, but I don't know. Is Bezos right? Should Thiel have just let it go? Is this about free speech? Is it about privacy? Is it about money's power? Gawker not happy. Interview here with the Wall Street Journal's Media Mix podcast. Gawker CEO Nick Denton, who himself is openly gay, said he was proud to celebrate venture capitalist Peter Thiel's homosexuality on his news site.
We don't believe that it's shameful for a prominent venture capitalist to be gay. We were celebrating the fact. And, you know, I'm sad that people still out there still think that being gay is some kind of shameful secret to be kept quiet if you want to have a successful business career.
But Peter Thiel was certainly not happy about it. Money behind this case, and he's serious in going after Gawker. Now, Jeff Bezos, founder, CEO of Amazon, super billionaire, came out yesterday saying, you know, this is wrong. Thiel shouldn't be doing this, funding the suit against Gawker. And he had some advice for Peter Thiel.
The best defense to speech that you don't like about yourself as a public figure is to develop a thick skin. It's really the only effective defense, because you can't stop it. You know, you are going to be misunderstood. If you're doing anything interesting in the world, you're going to have critics.
Now, I should say, in fact, Bezos never called Peter Thiel out by name, but listen to what he had to say yesterday, and it goes right to the Thiel case. This all in the context where Donald Trump is going hammer and tongs after the press. Just yesterday, he was on it hot and heavy. Let's see. Yeah, one second. This was Trump attacking the press in a news conference about his fundraising for veterans groups. Spent most of a 40-minute news conference yesterday criticizing and insulting reporters during questioning.
We have to read probably libelous stories, or certainly close, in the newspapers, and the people know the stories are false. I'm going to continue to attack the press. Look, I find the press to be extremely dishonest. I find the political press to be unbelievably dishonest.
And it's not just rhetoric, or maybe not. Back in Fort Worth, Texas in February, he went on a tirade against newspapers like the New York Times, Washington Post, said he plans to change libel laws in the U.S. so that he can have an easier time suing news organizations.
I'm going to open up our libel laws so when they write purposely negative and horrible and false articles, we can sue them and win lots of money. We're going to open up those libel laws.
Jason Tanz, there comes the nightmare scenario for First Amendment people. You got billionaires, you know, funding cases like this. You could have a president in the White House saying, let's change the libel laws. And pretty soon, I mean, the press is already back on its heels. Everybody knows economically. I mean, can you see a dynamic emerging here where we just had a fundamentally less aggressive, less courageous press?
Yeah, I mean, look, the press is not universally admired. In fact, it's pretty universally not admired. Yeah. And yeah, right. And to the extent that we are now sitting here defending Gawker, I actually think as a PR move, this is actually awful that we're having this conversation in terms of the press. You know,
you mean defending people it like around that, outing Teal and a Hulk Hogan sex tape?
Yeah, we're defending, you know, pretty ugly stuff. And to the point of the first caller, I don't really blame anybody for listening to this and saying, you know, this is messed up. Like, there's a very simple story here, which is that Gawker was gleeful in its desire to kind of destroy lives and very capricious in the way they did it, and they should be punished for it. And I honestly, I'm not so sure I disagree with it. I think the bigger issue is, you know, when you have big chunks of money secretively moving around, right? And I actually kind of agree that there's nothing necessarily wrong with Peter Thiel funding the lawsuit.
Okay.
What freaks me out is that it was a secret.
Yeah.
Similarly to the way that Sheldon Adelson secretively purchased the big newspaper in Las Vegas. It was only his own reporters who uncovered it. You know, these are – the fact that there are these kind of shadowy forces that are trying to punish news organizations for publishing things they don't like without any kind of pushback, that to me is what's really frightening.
I mean, you're with Wired, Jason. Is there a Silicon Valley culture among the masters of the universe there that says, don't even think about writing about, you know, things we don't want in print? We're above or beyond that?
Yes. I hate to say it, but yes. And actually this case has really exposed it. If you look at the response on Twitter over the last week, you know, since the news of Thiel's involvement broke, it has exposed a great canyon between the beliefs of the tech press and the beliefs of those people they covered. The tech press was very much, you know, wringing their hands and clutching their pearls, and the technologists were very much standing with Thiel and saying things like, you know, clickbait journalists need to be taught a lesson. So, I think part of that is just because the tech industry arose as outsiders and true believers in garages taking down and exploiting weaknesses in kind of society as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
And for a very long time, the press was kind of on their side. The press loves an underdog, and certainly Wired as well has been a champion of that movement. We remain one to this day. But what that has led to is an environment in which any sort of really serious criticism is seen as just, you know, being a hater. And even things like the initial reports against Theranos, when those came out, you saw a lot of wagon circling.
This was the company that had misrepresented what it was up to with this research? Or?
Yes, exactly.
Blood testing.
Blood testing company. Mm-hmm.
Right. And they have since been – those early reports have since been really backed up. There was something really fishy going on there. But the initial response from Silicon Valley was very much to defend the company and say, look, I think they have a good idea. They just need time to work it out. They shouldn't be exposed to all this negative pressure as they try to work these things out. So yes, there absolutely is a rift there.
I mean, all kinds of response online. Many people not happy with Gawker online. On the other hand, we've got Dweebus here saying – Dweebus, thank you – writing, so you're implying a billionaire used his dough to manipulate the levers of power and pursue a personal vendetta. I'm shocked to find there's gambling going on in here. Douglas in Bridgewater, Virginia. Doug, you're on the air.
Hello.
What do you think?
So I think this what's really important to remember here is that this is Gawker. Like, I understand that they do, in fact, produce media, but generally speaking, their entire business model is making clickbait. Realistically, we're doing exactly what they want. We're talking about them. Everyone listening is going to go to Gawker.com, see what they are, who they are. That's how they're going to pay Hulk Hogan off, is by giving them more attention.
Douglas, you got a rough line, but let me pick it up. Emily, they're a bottom feeder, so, you know, big deal.
I just don't buy this. I think Gawker is more than that. I would not publish everything they publish. I would not out gay people who don't want to be outed. I would not have published that sex tape, personally. But they do other important reporting. They have broken big stories that make powerful people really uncomfortable. That is super important. They are, on the whole, a force for making Silicon Valley and other powerful sectors of the country more honest and more accountable.
Here's a little bit of tape from May of 2015. Gawker posted this leaked anti-union training video from Walmart. Just an example.
Labor unions are really interested in Walmart and have spent millions of dollars specifically focused on us. Now, I think you know by now that our company prefers to have open and direct communication with our associates. We don't think that a labor union is necessary here.
Just a snapshot. And yes, Gawker has plenty of the other more tawdry stuff, but there's just a little bit of how they brought something from inside the Walmart world out to the public. Think of it what you will. Mark Randazza, does it matter if there's bottom feeder stuff mixed in with the rest at Gawker when it comes to defending the First Amendment?
No, look, I will stand up and say Gawker has provided a valuable service. I mean, Gawker, to their credit, after Charlie Hebdo, they republished the cartoons when the New York Times didn't have the courage to do so.
Yep.
So that's all well and good. But what I'm missing in this conversation is we're not considering the difference between a defamation suit and a privacy suit, for example. You know, a lot of these cases, I handled tons of slap suits where, you know, some rich individual wants to bankrupt a media outlet just through litigation because they've published a negative opinion, or they've published, a story that they don't like, or, of course, you know, we now have the situations where they just buy the media outlet. But we're not at all talking about what the real tort was here. This was an invasion of privacy case, and I think we have, you know, unfortunately, real blinders here when it comes to that. And I think
we had our trial attorney calling in from Florida saying, look, Hulk Hogan was a very public figure. He'd been preaching about, you know, morals and all the rest for years. So he doesn't have the same protection as somebody else might. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I don't buy that. You know, I subscribe to the football field theory, you know, where everybody kind of wants to say, well, where do we draw the line?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know where we draw the line. That's what the beauty of the common law system is. You know, the common law system is like jazz, where the civil law system is like classical music. But if you look at a football field, you know where the end zones are, and then you've got that big middle of the field where you can still play. Was this in the end zone? I think it was. I mean, I don't see why the fact that this guy was a professional wrestler who had really, in large part, faded out of the public eye. Why is a private sex tape of him okay? You know, remember, there was just screaming outrage, I think it was last year when they had the Fappening, when these hackers had found all these intimate photos of people in Hollywood and published them. And nobody was standing up and saying, that's okay, this is all newsworthy. I mean, if Hulk Hogan having sex is a matter of public interest,
yeah.
Why aren't naked pictures of Jennifer Garner? Whatever her name is from the Hunger Games.
Yeah.
And I think that's not newsworthy under either circumstance. Now, who's to make that decision? That's the real tough question here. Do we want judges and juries making that decision? Well, you know, when I was in journalism school and when I taught in journalism school, part of the issue you talked about was what can you do and then what should you do? And, you know, unfortunately, as I said in my CNN column, we may wind up saying that's why we can't have nice things. You know, when we don't have any kind of control on whether people are going to invade someone else's privacy, not talking about opinion, I'm not talking about news stories, I'm talking about actual right to privacy that I have to admit hasn't been accepted by the Supreme Court yet, but it simply hasn't risen to that level yet. Do we not care about that? Because at what level do we drop down the meter on who's enough of a public figure?
Yeah, Jennifer Lawrence, Hulk Hogan, where do we draw the line? Paul in Wichita, Kansas. Paul, you're on. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hello. I can't believe what I'm hearing. You guys are trying to say, people are trying to say that because this man invested in something that worked out for him, he's wrong. This is clearly invasion of privacy. What happens behind your front door is your business. It's nobody else's business in the entire world. If you present yourself in public doing something, then it's newsworthy. Then people should know. People might want to know.
Yeah.
But if it's not your front door, it's your business, period.
Paul, we've got it. Our time is short. Emily, I mean, we certainly understand that perspective. And yet this has got everybody's attention because there are plenty of billionaires out there right now. You know, it wasn't just about Hulk Hogan, it turns out. I mean, he has an end in mind, it appears, which is, I guess, the destruction of Gawker. And people look around and say, all right, this isn't pretty, but where does the press end up if it operates under that kind of threat all the time? Is it a problem, Emily?
Well, I think we're losing sight of the principle of proportionality here, right? I mean, you can want to punish Gawker for invasion of privacy. I'm not in that camp, but let's say you really feel that strongly.
Okay.
So should Gawker pay, damages that would be negotiated without the involvement of a billionaire with incredibly deep pockets?
In which case, Hulk Hogan probably would have settled for much less money. He'd be happy to have it.
Exactly. That would be the standard end to a lawsuit like this. And then Gawker would continue and, you know, maybe be somewhat more careful in its handling of, you know, people's private lives. I don't actually feel like Nick Denton is, you know, eager to publish another sex tape like this.
Yeah, maybe
I'm wrong.
Yeah,
right? I mean, so maybe, and Gawker would have learned some kind of lesson, but Gawker would also be able to keep doing journalism. And just remember that Gizmodo, which is a Gawker site, is why we know that Facebook was potentially changing the algorithm for how it presents trending topic news stories in a way that may have disadvantaged conservatives. That's a big story. We should know about that. Lots of people get their news from Facebook. That matters. So Gawker is not just easily dismissed as this like rag that has no public value. I think that's just really inaccurate.
I guess people are very sensitive, maybe particularly, Jason, at a time when you've got Donald Trump saying, I'm going to open up our libel laws so that when they write purposely negative and horrible and false articles, we can sue them and win lots of money. There's the chill threat, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, we're in a weird epistemological moment where, you know, we're really arguing over, you know, what is reality in some sense, you know, and there's this kind of who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes quality to a lot of what Donald Trump says. And a lot of people are just drawn to that idea that, you know, these elites have been telling us what to think and we don't believe them. And so even as Donald Trump says things that sound to those of us in the media profession as outrageous, it does touch a nerve among those who feel like people who are not like them have been telling them what to think and they're sick of it.
Mark Rendazza, 20 seconds. Proportionality, 140 million, just too much. Killer weight.
Look, that's the purpose of a jury, to decide what the damage is and what the punishment should be. In this situation, is that what it would take to rein in rampant invasion of privacy? That's what the jury thought. I think it's probably going to be reduced on appeal. But, you know, nevertheless, if just as a closing thought, I mean, I want people to be careful that
they
weigh privacy and defamation differently, because this is, you know, what Donald Trump was talking about. Yeah, I wrote a column on how horrifying the thought of that is, because we actually do have Supreme Court justices who are willing to scale back New York Times versus Sullivan.
We're out of time right there. Mark Rendazza, Emily Bazelon, Jason Tanz, our thanks to all of you. Rein in, crush. We'll see. This is On Point.